It's not hard to get exactly what you want. All you have to have is a little power. And then you have to have an accomplice of some kind, someone who will stand by your side and support your decisions, encourage them, justify them. And then you need to be willing to bend or even break a few little rules. It's not that hard to get exactly what you want. What's hard is giving God exactly what He wants.
That's the Reverend Dr. Jim Somerville, and today he brings you a powerful message of faith and hope. I'm Peter Wallace. This is Day One.
Welcome to Day One, the weekly program that brings you outstanding preachers from America's mainline Protestant churches, sharing insight and inspiration from God's Word for your life. Now to introduce this week's preacher, here's our host, Peter Wallace.
Thank you, Sherry. Today on Day One, we're honored to have with us the Reverend Dr. Jim Somerville, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church of Richmond, Virginia. Before coming to Richmond in 2008, he served as pastor of the First Baptist Church of Washington, D.C. for 7 years. He earlier served churches in Wingate, North Carolina and Newcastle, Kentucky. He is a graduate of Georgetown College in Kentucky and earned his Master of Divinity and his Ph.D. from the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. Jim is also the co-founder of a unique new resource, A Sermon for Every Sunday. Jim, welcome to Day One.
Thank you, Peter. Good to be here.
You've been at Richmond's First Baptist for 8 years now, a historic and thriving urban congregation. How would you describe the people and the ministry of your church?
I'm loving First Baptist Richmond. And it was a big change coming from Washington, D.C. to Richmond, Virginia, 2 hours and 200 years south, as some people say. But there's a wonderful quality of life in Richmond. You can find parking places. You don't get tied up in traffic. People are generally very nice in Richmond. So it's been a big change from our nation's capital, where politics is in the air you breathe, and people are kind of stuck on just how important they are, some of them. But I love that city. I love Richmond. It's a good place to be.
You are the co-founder of an amazing resource for churches of all sizes. It's called A Sermon for Every Sunday. It's brilliant in its simplicity. But tell us why you and your co-founder, David Powers, started this and how it's evolved.
Yeah, thank you for asking. A Sermon for Every Sunday is just what it sounds like. It is a video sermon by one of America's best preachers for every Sunday of the liturgical year. Not the same preacher every week. We've got a number of great preachers who stand in front of our cameras and deliver heartfelt homilies looking straight into that glassy lens. So at home, you get the feeling that these people are preaching just to you and for you. The idea was that small churches, churches without a pastor, churches not able to afford a preacher, might be able to project video during Sunday morning worship services when it came time for the sermon, instead of having to find an interim or a supply preacher on a particular day. We're also learning that it's very useful in Bible studies and small groups and house churches. And some people just like to listen to these sermons and learn from them on the morning commute. It's been a learning experience for us as we've put it out there to see who our customers might be.
And as you mentioned, you've had a number of outstanding church leaders who have participated, and several of them have also been on Day One. Give us a sense of some of the folks you've had already.
Yeah, we've had Michael Curry, the presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church. He's such a great preacher, so animated, and it was wonderful to watch him come in and sit down in front of the camera. And I said, you know, Bishop Curry, we want you to preach this passage from John's Gospel. He said, which passage? I said, you know, John 1, where he said, oh, yeah, fine, let's go. Okay, roll them. And he started preaching, you know, without notes, just looking into the camera, and beautiful, powerful sermon. Other people use manuscripts, some use notes, but we've had Amy Butler from the Riverside Church in New York, Will Willimon, of course, our old friend who just keeps knocking them out of the park,
Absolutely. And
Brian McLaren and Lauren Winner and others who have come and preached for us. And it's been a great experience for us, learning to work with them and to put this project out there so that people can have access to it.
And you've preached on a few as well.
I have, yeah. Before we got that funding, I thought, you know, if I'm going to keep this going, somebody's going to have to do this for free. And so it was a way to kind of bridge the gap between that old model and the new model that we're using.
So for those interested in more information about this resource, either for individual or group or church use, what should they do?
They should go to www.asermonforeverysunday.com and find the resources that are there.
It seems to me that resources like this will be a key for the future of the church. Do you agree?
I hope so. Mm-hmm. I talked with someone about this not long ago who said, Jim, you have to decide, is this a resource for small, struggling churches, or mm-hmm. is this the church of the future? And I hadn't thought about it that way. But it may be that in an age when people access more and more of their information through the internet, that this is one way people nourish their souls, mm-hmm. is through sermons that are available online.
As we've found as well. Well, your day one sermon for this Sunday is based on 1 Kings chapter 21, and you're going to take us through that rather amazing story through your sermon. It's quite lengthy. We encourage our listeners to crack open their Bible after the program, perhaps, and read it for themselves, 1 Kings chapter 21. Your sermon is entitled, How to Get Exactly What You Want. Jim, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Peter. It all started with a tomato sandwich. Ahab had grown up in the city. He didn't know much about life in the country. But when he visited some of his cousins in the valley, they took him out to the garden where he could see those ripe red tomatoes hanging heavy on the vine, warmed by the sun. They picked a few of the biggest ones and brought them into the house, put them on the kitchen counter, and then showed Ahab how to cut off a juicy half-inch-thick slab and lay it carefully on a fresh white slice of Wonder Bread. They showed him how to spread Duke's mayonnaise on another slice of bread, sprinkle on a little salt and pepper, and then put the sandwich together. And when he took the first bite, when he inhaled the aroma of fresh bread and real mayonnaise and then felt that sweet, acidic burst of tomato flavor on his tongue, the surprising contrast of textures, the warm juice trickling down his chin, he knew that he had to have tomato sandwiches for the rest of his life. When he got back to the palace in Samaria, he asked his chef to fix him one, but it wasn't the same. There was a lot of fanfare, a big, showy presentation as the chef rolled in a cart and lifted the silver dome from the plate. But when Ahab bit into the sandwich, the bread was crusty and hard. The chef had put some kind of fancy Dijon mustard on it, and the tomato itself tasted like plastic. Ahab missed the simple pleasure of Wonder Bread and Duke's mayonnaise. But most of all, he missed those big, beefy, vine-ripened tomatoes. You just can't get good tomatoes at the store, the chef protested. They import them, green, from Egypt. And so Ahab began to dream of having his own garden. He sent away for the Burpee seed catalog, and at night he would lie beside his wife Jezebel in their big, king-size bed, reading the descriptions aloud. Listen to this, he would say, as if he were reading poetry. The Big Mama Hybrid is an enormous plum tomato that's incredibly sweet and meaty. Mmm. Or this one. The 4th of July Hybrid is the first tomato to ripen by Independence Day. Be the first on your block to pick a ripe tomato. Oh, and this one. This is the best one of all. Burpee's Burger Hybrid is a better beefsteak. Very early to fruit, with firm, succulent slices perfect for sandwiches, grilling, or salads. Doesn't that sound delicious? But by then, Jezebel would have turned off the lamp on her side of the bed and put the pillow over her head to muffle the sound of his reading. Of course, it was too late to get started that summer, but Ahab began to scout out a site for next year's vegetable garden. He had his driver take him all around the outlying regions of Samaria and out across the broad Jezreel Valley. There were plenty of good places for a garden, but none that really suited him. Too big, too far away, too something. And then one morning as he was putting on his robe, he happened to glance out the bedroom window and saw Naboth down there, working in his vineyard, pruning back some of those ancient vines and whistling while he worked. The vineyard backed right up against the palace wall, where it had always been. But it was like the nose on your face, you know? So familiar that you don't even notice it anymore. There it is, Ahab thought. Naboth's vineyard. The perfect size. The perfect location. All he would have to do is pull up those vines and plow up the ground, till it, smooth it, put in some hothouse tomato plants next spring, and by summer he would have all the tomatoes he could eat. Without a moment's hesitation, Ahab cinched up his robe and hurried down the stairs, out the back door and into the vineyard. Naboth, he yelled. Hey, Naboth! Yes, Naboth answered, puzzled. I'm just curious. What would you take for this vineyard? Ahab asked, rubbing his hands together. Oh, I couldn't take anything for it, Naboth said, wiping the back of his neck. This vineyard has been in my family for generations. It was planted by my great-great-great— Oh, come on, said Ahab impatiently. I'll pay you for it, or I'll give you another vineyard, a bigger one. Name your price. But Naboth was shocked by the very suggestion. God forbid that I sell off the family vineyard, he said. As I told you, it's been in the family for generations. I'm planning to pass it along to my own son someday. And then Naboth turned and went back to his work. But he wasn't whistling anymore. Do you know how it is when you're looking for a house and you find one that would be perfect at an unbelievable price, only to discover that someone else just signed a contract on it? Or when you've interviewed for a job, the perfect job, and you've got your fingers crossed hoping you'll get it when a letter comes that says, we've decided to go in a different direction. Or when the girl who said yes when you proposed begins to have second thoughts and eventually breaks off the engagement so she can marry your best friend. It doesn't take long to fall in love with a dream, to imagine how everything is going to be different and better as soon as that dream comes true. And when something happens to that dream, when it dies for whatever reason, the grief that goes with it is real. Ahab hadn't wanted that vineyard very long, but he had wanted it as much as he had ever wanted anything in his life. When he learned he couldn't have it, he took to his bed and refused to eat. He turned his face to the wall and wouldn't talk to anyone. He wouldn't return phone calls, wouldn't answer his email. I know, I know. It sounds a little silly to get yourself into such a full-blown pout over a vineyard. But I'm guessing that Ahab is not the only one among us who ever took to his bed because he couldn't get what he wanted. The death of a dream can do that to you, and more. For a while, Jezebel just let Ahab be, not sure quite what to do. But finally she came in and sat on the edge of the bed, running her fingers through his hair. What's the matter, baby? She cooed. Tell Mama all about it. Ahab didn't say anything at first. He just lay there, loving the fact that someone had noticed how miserable he was. At last he mumbled into his pillow, Naboth. What's that? Jezebel asked. Naboth, he said again, turning toward her. He won't give me his vineyard. I offered to pay him for it, give him another vineyard in exchange, but he wouldn't even discuss it, the stubborn fool. Well, said Jezebel, a little surprised, aren't you the king of Israel? Don't you make the rules around here? The nerve of that Naboth! Listen, why don't you get up and get dressed, get a little something to eat? If you want that vineyard, I will give it to you myself. And with that, she leaned over, gave him a peck on the cheek, and walked out of the bedroom like a woman on a mission. She went straight to Ahab's study, took out a few creamy sheets of the royal stationery and a Mont Blanc fountain pen, and immediately wrote letters to the elders and nobles of Samaria. "I need you to do me a favor," she wrote, as if she were Ahab. "I need you to declare a fast, call a solemn assembly, put Naboth front and center, and when he's there, I need you to have a couple of scoundrels accuse him of cursing God and the king. After that, take him out and stone him to death." And then she signed the letters with Ahab's name, sealed them with Ahab's seal. And because Ahab was the king of Israel, the thing was done with no questions asked. They declared a fast in Samaria. They called a solemn assembly. Naboth was seated front and center. Two scoundrels got up and swore that he had cursed God and the king. Now, the Bible said that if just one person testified against you, he couldn't be trusted. But if two people testified against you, well then, it must be true. The crowd could hardly believe its ears. They had known Naboth all his life, but they had never known him like this. They let out an angry shout and rushed upon him, determined that justice would be done. They dragged him outside the city walls and in a rage heaved heavy, jagged stones at him until his bones were shattered, his skull was crushed, and his body lay in a bloody, broken heap. Word quickly got back to Jezebel that Naboth was no more. And so she breezed into the royal bedroom, all smiles. She pulled back the draperies and opened the windows, letting the fresh air and sunshine fill the room. "Ahab," she said, in her little sing-song voice, "Ahab, get up. You've got a vineyard to inspect." "What?" Ahab asked, rubbing his eyes. "A vineyard?" "It's the strangest thing," Jezebel said, shaking her head. "Naboth dropped dead, just like that." And Ahab didn't even pretend to be sorry. A slow smile spread across his face, and then he threw back the covers and jumped out of bed. "Well," he said, pulling on his overalls, "looks like I need to go take possession of a vineyard." And that's when the word of the Lord came to Elijah. "I need you to go down to Samaria," the Lord told him. "I need you to have a word with Ahab, who is even now ripping up Naboth's vineyard by the roots. I need you to give him this message for me." And then God whispered in Elijah's ear what he needed Elijah to say. And without a word, Elijah got up, fetched his walking stick, and started down the road to Samaria. Ahab saw him coming and stomped over to the edge of the vineyard to meet him. "What do you want, you troubler of Israel?" he demanded. "I want to tell you something," Elijah said. "I want you to know that God sees everything, and that even what you do in secret is known to him. I want you to know that God has rules about the proper uses of power and about protecting the rights of the weak. I want you to know that there is a little thing called justice in this land, and God has called on me to proclaim it." "Oh, and one more thing," Elijah said before he turned to go. "In the place where the dogs licked up the blood of Naboth, they will lick up your blood too. Don't try to pretend that you weren't in on this the whole time." And then Elijah started up the road toward home, leaving Ahab to consider all that he had been promised. Judgment, wrath, death. To think that it had started with a tomato sandwich. It's not hard to get exactly what you want. All you have to have is a little power, which you can get in any number of ways. You can get it by having some money, or by getting promoted, by being elected to public office, or by being made king. And then you have to have an accomplice of some kind, someone who will stand by your side and support your decisions, encourage them, take action on them, maybe even justify them. And then you need to be willing to bend or even break a few little rules, like the one about not coveting your neighbor's possessions or bearing false witness against him. Maybe even the one about not murdering. It's not that hard to get exactly what you want. What's hard is giving God exactly what He wants. It contradicts our human nature. I've been trying to think what God would have wanted in this story. And I think He would have wanted Ahab to love his neighbor as he loved himself. The more I think about it, the more I think this story could have turned out differently than it did. Ahab could have looked out the window and seen Naboth down there tending his vineyard. He could have noticed that it was the perfect place to grow tomatoes. And then, without a moment's hesitation, he could have cinched up his robe, hurried down the stairs, out the back door, and into the vineyard. "Naboth," he might have said. "Hey, Naboth." "Yes?" "Listen, I ordered these tomato seeds from the Burpee catalog. I've been looking for a place to plant them, but I can't seem to find anything suitable. You've got a nice spot here. I thought maybe you could use them." "Well, thank you," Naboth might have said. And not that year, but the next, Naboth might have put those seeds into a little paper cups and set them up on the windowsill in his kitchen. And when they got big enough, he might have planted them in a corner of the vineyard where they could get plenty of sun. And when the tomatoes got ripe, he might have taken a big basketful to Ahab as a sort of thank you gift. And Ahab might have said, "Let me show you something, Naboth," and taken him into the kitchen to make two of the most delicious tomato sandwiches that have ever been made. Duke's mayonnaise and all. Can you picture the two of them sitting there at the kitchen table, eating those sandwiches with the juice dripping down their chins, laughing and talking like old friends? And isn't that a better ending than the one we have in this story from 1 Kings 21, where the dogs have licked up Naboth's blood and Ahab is next? It's not hard to get exactly what you want. What's hard is to give God exactly what He wants. But if we could do it, we might discover that that's how to get exactly what we need.
The Reverend Dr. Jim Somerville was our preacher today. Jim is senior pastor of First Baptist Church of Richmond, Virginia. His message is entitled, "How to Get Exactly What You Want." For a free printed transcript, call us toll-free at 1-888-411-DAY1. That's 888-411-3291. Or write to us at Day 1, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia, 30305. Day One depends on the financial contributions of our faithful listeners. If you appreciate our ministry, please consider sending a donation. We're grateful for your much-needed support. I'm Sherry Miller. Jim Somerville returns to Day One in 6 weeks. Next week, we're honored to have with us the Reverend Dennis Patterson, Jr., Associate Priest for Parish Life and Christian Education at St. Luke's Episcopal Church in Atlanta, Georgia. His sermon is entitled, "A Meeting on the Shore, The Power of Showing Up." Be sure to tune in. This October, Day One invites you to join Peter Marty on a Mediterranean cruise, focusing on the journeys of the Apostle Paul. It's sure to be an unforgettable faith-building experience. For information, visit dayone.org/travel. Now, Jim Somerville offers some final reflections on today's sermon with our host, Peter Wallace.
Jim, I could almost taste that tomato sandwich listening to you preach about it. What a story, and you unfolded it beautifully. You pointed out that Ahab really pouted over not persuading Naboth to sell him that vineyard, but it's understandable. We all know what it feels like to lose out on a house, you said, that we want to purchase, or a job we want to get, or when our dream doesn't come true for whatever reason, our grief is real. But does this story help us see another side of that grief and what we should do with it?
I hope so. I think that whenever there is a loss, there is grief. And if the loss is profound, the grief is also profound. In the story here in 1 Kings 21, I imagined how Ahab might have approached that differently and might have ended up with the same result he was dreaming for, but in a much different way, a way that wasn't so much about him taking exactly what he wanted, but thinking about his neighbor enough to share and to open that door and to create some opportunity for another ending. I love it when we have the possibility to write a different ending to the story than the one that seems inevitable. And sometimes when I'm counseling with people, I will say, you know, this is a bad situation, but we don't know how this story is going to end. We don't. And I think for believers to begin to exercise some grace in their own story, to offer some love, to invite some possibility that might not have been there otherwise. It's something to think about, and I think this story elicits that kind of thought.
And Elijah really lets Ahab have it with the word of God, who has rules about the proper use of power, about protecting the rights of the weak, about justice. And you said it's not hard to get exactly what you want. What's hard is giving God exactly what God wants. It contradicts our human nature. So how do we overcome that natural response?
When they asked Jesus, what's the most important thing in the world? He said, to love God and to love your neighbor. But that is not natural for us. We have to work at that. We have to practice that. But when we do, I think we begin to discover what our lives are really for, what we were made to be. So God knows best what's good for us and gives us those rules, the kind of rules that Elijah shared with Ahab, for our own benefit. But our tendency is to work the opposite way, to just grab what feels right to us and what we want.
Jim, what's one thing from your sermon today that you hope our listeners will keep in mind this week?
Well, I hope they'll think about tomato sandwiches and how good they are and how worth having. I also hope that they will think about their neighbors and to be as practical about that as possible, to look to the neighbors on either side and to wonder, how can I open the door of hospitality to that person? How can I include that person in the love that God has shared with me? Because life is short, and good neighbors are hard to find.
Jim Somerville, thank you for being with us. We look forward to having you back in 6 weeks.
Thank you, Peter.
Day One is the voice of America's mainline Protestant churches. Visit us online at dayone.org. Our program is recorded and edited by Donald Jones and produced by Peter Wallace. Thank you for joining us. I'm Sherry Miller, wishing you all God's blessings on Day One and forever.